Hello, and welcome back to the Healthcare Executive Insights Podcast. My name is Elliot Sloan with the McAllen Group. Today, we are very excited to introduce our guest, Kelly Ladd, who is the CEO at Piedmont Internal Medicine. Kelly, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. So let's start with learning a little bit about your professional background.
So Elliot, I started in healthcare back in 1989 in a home healthcare service. So I've been around the block a few times. Since that time, most of my career has been spent in the private physician space. I have been in a couple healthcare systems, and I find that I actually prefer managing private physician practices a lot more than I enjoy being in the big conglomerate of healthcare spaces. So I've been in this industry well over 30 years. I am certified through MGMA's certification program. I'm also a fellow of the American College of Medical Practice Executives. I have been in large multi-specialty groups, single specialty groups, large primary care groups, you pretty much name it, I have probably done it.
Sure.
One of the things I really like to pride myself on is being able to try just about anything within scope of service to expand business models, strategic planning. I enjoy trying to figure out which way to maneuver the practice depending on whatever CMS wind is blowing.
Yeah, it sounds like you've really had a dabble in all the potential different business models within healthcare on that spectrum, from small private practice to medium private practice to health system and everything in between.
Yes. It's been quite a ride. So, you know, one of my first ventures in a health system was actually establishing a centralized business office. And that helped me gain a lot more appreciation as mergers and acquisitions started coming into play, and really the importance of having a good handle on the full revenue cycle. Fast forward this going 15 years, and one of the challenges that I see being a part of a healthcare CIN as an independent practice is that sometimes when you're on a joint or a system EMR system and practice management system, such as the one that we're on, that these systems tend to silo some of their departments. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of people specializing in certain parts of the revenue cycle, but you don't always have someone who can see the whole picture. So to me, being able to see the picture, putting pieces of the puzzle together are really important, because these days every penny counts.
Sure.
And I don't like to leave any pennies on the table, especially where insurance is concerned. So being in those types of situations really has made me appreciate the full scope and variety of healthcare settings, and that which enables me to maneuver my practice a little more fluidly than
sure.
most, because I can sometimes foresee what's around the corner just because of the experiences I've had.
Sure. Yeah. And it sounds like you are able to really take an innovative approach to the groups that you're working with, and your focus on connecting the dots on a revenue side, on a system side, even on the personnel and the staff. It feels like that is the biggest missing piece to a well-oiled machine in the private practice space, is connecting the dots and having fluid communications happening between systems, between technologies, etc. Why do you think that it's taken so long for healthcare to have connectivity?
I think it's taken a long time because of the complexities that go along in healthcare. I can remember even 20 years ago, prior to HIPAA coming along, I had, I think, one compliance book that sat on my shelf, and that was OSHA. Sure. And now I look at all of my compliance files, and you know, it's OSHA, it's HIPAA, it's understanding human resource laws, both state and federal. It's, you know, having a corporate compliance plan to make sure that you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing with CMS. It's understanding cybersecurity and network vulnerabilities. It's understanding the ever-changing of private health information. It's understanding how important patient experience is, and that a part of our reimbursement gets dumped into that. Whereas 20 years ago, you know, the patient came in, you saw the patient, you sent a bill to the patient or insurance, and it got paid. And now you fast forward, and we start seeing all of these different dots. And mm-hmm. when you really start paring down how everything is connected, it can really be overwhelming. Sure. I mean, as much experience as I have, there are days where I just want to pull out my hair because I'm looking at 10 different emails from 10 different carriers all wanting 10 different things. You know, this carrier A decided that they're no longer going to require pre-certs on A, B, and C. But then carrier D has decided they're going to add 20 pre-certs onto A, B, C, and D. And so there's a constant change of being able to figure out, okay, I can only have, you know, my budget is only so big to have X amount of staff people, and sure. here's the workload. So how do I take technology? How do I take staff experience? How do I, you know, look at the workflow and get that all together to achieve everything that I need to achieve to make sure that patients are being taken care of, the doctors are making a decent salary, the staff are getting paid, the staff have all the resources they need to get their jobs done in an efficient manner.
Sure.
And because there's so many variances, I think that really can become challenging and overwhelming. Sometimes I just have to just take a step back and, you know, see, am I missing a piece? Is mm-hmm. there something that we can do better? Is there a piece of technology that we're missing? Is there technology out there that can actually be compatible with the EMR system that we're on? We're sure. on a system EMR, which means I'm an end user only. I have no control over what is interfaced into that EMR, whether it's an online appointment scheduling add-on, sure. Sometimes payment systems, whatever. And so it's really difficult at times to know that there's technology out there that I'm not able to tap into because that's not in my control. So what can I do on my end that I can control
sure.
to help move the process along in a more efficient manner?
Yeah. And, you know, I think you really brought up such a valid point, which is 20 years ago, the dots weren't complex to the point where you need highly educated years of experience executives to optimize your algorithm of care.
Correct.
Right? It, you know, doctors today can't run their own business and be good at treating patients.
Correct.
You just can't do them both, in my opinion.
You can't. And then it even goes a little deeper than that, because now, you know, think about 20 years ago, what the front office looked like, or what your clinical medical assistants look like. You know, it's a totally different ballgame. You mm-hmm. know, the complexities of the patient intake. You know, we have to hire people that understand how insurance works, because if you see a patient and the person who scheduled the appointment made a mistake when they registered that patient, one of several things can happen. You know, one thing that could happen is that we're not participating providers.
Sure.
So insurance is going to slap the patient with a higher deductible, and then the patient gets upset because they have a bill.
Sure.
Well, why didn't you tell us that we weren't in network?
Yep.
Or, you know, everything gets denied and we have to either file an appeal or write off an entire office visit. So the, you know, the complexities of even our frontline staff have become almost overbearing. You can't tell somebody, okay, when you're registering a patient, you put the name here, you do this, you check this box, you check that box. You've got to train your staff to understand why they're doing certain things, as well as the impact of the why. So that's one of the things that we've done in our practice, is just making sure that not just our front office understands the complexities of scheduling a patient and making sure the information is correct, but also having our medical assistants kind of just double check as they're walking a patient back into a room to make sure that the address was captured, that the insurance is the same.
Sure.
And getting them to also understand how important, you know, all of those steps are and the impact it has on the practice as a whole if a step is missed.
Oh yeah. Clean data is everything in healthcare.
It is. You know, our practice prides itself. It was funny, well, to me funny. A couple years ago, I was at a big MGMA convention and went to our claims clearinghouse vendor, and I had a couple questions, and they brought up our account, and they were looking at the rejection rate, and all of a sudden, this gentleman just had this look on his face that was almost priceless, and he just turned to me, he looks at me, and he goes, "I've never seen a perfect rejection rate pass." And wow. I was like, no, it's not perfect. It's 98.6%. And he's like, "I think that's about as perfect as you can get." And so, wow. But I say this because of really stressing the importance of getting your staff motivated to work with you and them understanding what their stake in the game is.
Sure.
And how important that is in getting things to run the right way.
Yeah. And them learning the consequences of a little mistake that in their minds, a little mistake, what it means downstream.
Correctly. Well, in the case of our practice, it actually is money in their pocket. Our physicians are very smart people, our partners, and our practice employees are on a incentive bonus program. It's basically a profit sharing incentive program.
Wow.
And so we really make sure our employees understand that the bigger the profit margin is, the bigger their bonus is.
Yep. That's amazing. So everyone's got now, stake in the game.
That's right. So now when they know that there's a stake in a game, and it's really been a game changer.
Oh yeah.
Because now I'll have employees that will come to me and say, "Hey, we think that we might be able to shave off a couple dollars here if we tweak this a little bit."
Innovators, not just employees.
Exactly.
I love it. Kudos to you and your team and your partners, because they're steps way, way ahead of the game. I mean, I come across many medical practices and health systems that hire the best surgeons, the best providers, the best nurses, the best technicians, and then the cheapest front desk receptionist team that they could hire with little training, no SOPs in place. And it's like, what are you doing? This is your front line. Patients will never even get to you. They'll be quicker to leave a bad review if they had a bad experience on the phone or in the waiting room versus in the exam room.
Exactly. Well, they don't ever want to confront the doctor about something, but they're not afraid to confront the staff.
Sure.
And you know, that's another thing that, you know, we kind of pride ourselves. This number may scare people a little bit, but we have over 1,000 SOPs in our document management system. And
wow.
I don't want people to think that, oh gosh, we are like over, you know, regulatory, you know, facility or anything like that. When I look at an SOP or policy and procedure, I look at that as a training guide. And that's what we do. I mean, we go so far as we'll script things for the staff, because sometimes this, you know, a patient will come up and just throw a curveball. And yep. Sometimes our staff are like, well, we don't know how to answer this.
Sure.
So we'll do role playing. We look at these as training tools and really want the staff to have access. They just don't sit on a shelf. We're constantly reviewing,
refreshing.
And refreshing, tweaking and training and retraining, because again, we want to empower all of our employees and give them, you know, a sense of some type of authority that, hey, you know, patient, I understand that you're upset, but let me tell you what our process is. We have a written process.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the time, I would say 99.8% of the time, things go flawlessly.
Sure.
However, sometimes something strange happens. And it's always nice for me to be able to go back to my doctors and say, look, here's the procedure. Everybody followed the procedure. This was a one-off.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happened. You know, doesn't mean the process is broken.
Sure.
It could mean that maybe we need to look at that process again and figure out, you know, what happened and is there something we can improve on or is there something that we do need to change?
Or add a new SOP to the library.
Or add a new SOP to the library. So, you know, we try really not to add too many. We'd rather revise the ones that
sure.
we have.
Sure.
But again, on any given day, it's really giving our employees a tool to empower them to be the best that they can be.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like you have a stellar team that everyone feels like they have a voice and they're all looking at it as we're partners, right? Because they have skin in the game. We're not just here to clock in and clock out. We're here to make the business better and make the patients have a better experience, which is ultimately the goal for everyone in the office, most likely. Tell me a little bit about Piedmont Internal Medicine, just kind of an overview of the operation.
Sure. So Piedmont Internal Medicine was actually established in 2015. 10 of the 11 original partners were actually employed physicians in a health system here in Atlanta, and they decided that they wanted to become captains of their own destiny, so to speak. So I was brought in to help offboard them from the system. So we have been a private practice for almost 9 years. We'll have our 9-year anniversary as far as opening the doors August 1st.
Wow.
And so we have 10 doctors. I have 4 mid-level providers. We have a huge clinic with 38 exam rooms.
Wow.
We have an outreach program that we call Well Touch. That deals with being proactive with remote patient monitoring and chronic care management. We actually started the Well Touch program back in 2016.
COVID days.
Before COVID days. So it was interesting. I saw a need through some of the HEDIS measures that the insurance companies were trying to collect. There's a lot of paperwork involved, and I started doing some math and realized that we could enhance our revenue if we could go ahead, get the paperwork filled out for the doctor, let the doctor review, sign off, and get it back to the insurance company. That was part of the puzzle. The other part of the puzzle was identifying our chronic care patients and then being proactive. A part of this was we were hiring mid-level providers. The doctors wanted to be able to focus more on physicals because I'm primary care. So my bread and butter are our physicals.
Sure.
And we were trying to figure out how we could better leverage our mid-level providers.
Sure.
So, you know, I came up with this idea one day. It was like, you know, we have a population of people that have chronic care illnesses. Our whole mantra is we want to try to make people as well as possible or keep people as well as possible.
Sure.
So how do we go about that? So we started off just running lists of patients with chronic care diagnoses, and we would call the patients. We'd look to make sure that, you know, see when was the last time they came in for maintenance check. There's certain standards of care for, you know, if somebody has hypertension, you want to have them come into the office maybe 2 to 3 times a year, depending on what the situation is. And so we were going back and looking at these patients, and if they had not been in for their, you know, in between physical checkup, we were calling, making them appointment and getting them in with the mid-level provider to make sure that, hey, you know, we just want to check on you, make sure that, you know, everything is okay.
Preventative.
Yes. Well, fast forward this, when right around the time COVID hit, actually before COVID hit, we started talking with a company about doing remote patient monitoring to monitor blood pressure, to monitor, you know, patients' pulse ox with, especially, you know, if they had asthma, COPD, things like that, diabetes, and BMI.
Sure.
And then COVID hits.
Got it.
So that kind of triggered a fast forward movement to where now we have 1,000 patients in our remote care monitoring and chronic care program. We've been very successful in being able to leverage the patient outreach. And what's even more exciting than that is the stories that we have, where we have prevented patients from having to go into the hospital, and in many cases actually have saved patients' lives.
Sure.
Because we're monitoring them almost 24/7 with these devices. And we have outreach where a nurse calls the patient, you know, hey, we just want to do a check, you know, see how you're doing. If a blood pressure is out of range, we get alerted. A phone call goes to that patient, you know, hey, you know, we just want to find out what's going on. Your blood pressure was elevated. And it's really been just a great enhancement to patient care. And
sure.
I'm kind of looking, if I had a crystal ball, I would say that what we're doing now, and well, gosh, we've implemented this. It'll be 4 years in April since we started the program.
Wow.
And my crystal ball tells me that this will become a standard of care in the future for anybody who has a chronic care condition.
Oh yeah. It's got to be. I mean, especially with the elderly population, they're calling it the silver wave. I don't know if you've heard that term.
Yes.
There's, I think, 50 million elderly that are going to be in their 65 to 80s over the next 5 to 10 years. And there's only 1.5 million available beds. There's just no skilled nursing facilities and assisted living facilities for the aging population. So that, I think, will be the first big at-home care movement, is, you know, there's not enough facilities. So what do we have to do is bring hospital services and skilled nursing services to every home out there that has elderly.
Right. Yeah. That was one of the themes that, I've been hearing at some of the big meetings, is how to leverage AI, how to move stable patients, you know, into a home environment and still be able to monitor them.
Sure.
And so again, I go back to, you know, the whole theme of our practice and philosophy with all of our physicians and employees is, mm-hmm. let's do what we can do to make sure we're keeping the patients well, whether that's, you know, monitoring. In our practice, we're a little different. We actually require anybody over the age of 40 to have an annual physical. And
smart.
if you don't comply, you're asked to leave the practice.
Smart. I mean, you're saving lives. You're doing these patients a big favor by making them come see you once a year.
Well, it's not just that. If we're investing all this time and effort into trying to keep you healthy,
yeah,
you as the patient need to take the time and effort to also keep yourself healthy.
For sure.
You know, at least as healthy as possible. Be compliant. Take your medicine. Do what the doctor tells you to do.
Yeah. Are you doing, I imagine, a lot of telemedicine?
We do a fair amount of telemedicine, especially after COVID. You know, telemedicine basically saved our bacon, as well as a lot of other practices around the country.
Sure.
But we still do a lot of telemedicine, especially if patients have upper respiratory. We're trying to keep the germs down.
Sure.
It's better than the patient not coming in. And
for sure.
We found that for some of our patients, especially inclement weather with some of our older patients, that it's nice to be able to see those patients, check on them, make sure they're doing okay, and being able to look at them and know that, okay, their color looks good, or, you know, we know our patients well enough that if, you know, if we had, you know, patient Jane Doe on screen and we've been treating her for years, we can tell whether or not, you know, she's maybe fibbing a little bit where sure. She's saying she's fine, but she doesn't really look fine on camera. And, you know, then we can be prompted to investigate that a little bit. And then we may find out that, yeah, she didn't take her blood pressure medicine on time or something else was going on. She just didn't want to say.
So and your remote monitoring devices are also going to be giving you that data.
Yes, exactly.
And your clinical team's so dialed in because they're so focused on patient care, they're not worried about managing the business.
Correct. And it's been a great feature. I mean, one of the stories that it's a little bit sad, but it has a good ending. We found that every time the patient would come into the office, their blood pressure was fine. We put them on the remote patient monitoring, and then we started seeing, you know, these really erratic patterns with their blood pressure. And because of the patient engagement between the remote care nurse and the patient, we found out that the patient wasn't taking their blood pressure medicine as directed because they couldn't afford it, but they were too embarrassed to tell the doctor. So we were able to make arrangements, you know, get the patient on a medicine they could afford, you know, and keep, you know, walking that step back. Again, with that type of medicine, it's an interaction between the remote care nurse, who's not necessarily in our office, who's, you know, literally remote, but being a part of a care team that involves our on-site medical assistant and the physician. And we go as far as if the patient needs an appointment, if the remote care nurse says, you know what, we really need you to come in and see the doctor, they can, you know, that remote care nurse can press a button on the phone and connect that patient right with our front desk to make nice. An office visit. And at the same time, they're sending the doctor's medical assistant a message saying, hey, Jane Doe's blood pressure has been spiking. We want them to make an appointment. We transfer them to the front desk. Can you follow up to make sure that she has made that appointment?
It's wonderful. Yeah, it sounds like you guys are really embracing the right technologies to deliver premium white glove service to your patients. And, you know, what I constantly think about is what I feel is needed for patients to have healthier lives and quicker to find disease is specialties that can speak to each other. And, you know, internal medicine and primary care really seem to be the epicenter of a patient's life and journey, and then they're sent out for different specialties, you know, depending on their illnesses. But there's very few systems, notes, charts being communicated from internal med out, or even back in from rheumatology, from cardiology, from you name it, orthopedics, and all of the list of specialties that aging, not even aging, but just a lot of folks, unfortunately, will see throughout their lives. Same with primary care. You know, we have a lot, well, you know, just with some programs I'm a part of, you know, we have patients that looking to get authorized for a procedure. Maybe it's a pain procedure and they need to get a clearance from their PCP, and it takes 3 weeks to get that clearance back. And then this patient's suffering in pain. The one doctor's office is calling the other doctor's office. They can't get it. And it's just like, you know, how do we break the walls between different groups and practices?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So we're on a healthcare system, which is Epic.
Sure.
That helps because we're able to have real-time notes in between specialists and whatnot. You know, I think it's the EMR and practice management systems are so complex because you've got your HCPCS codes, you have your ICD-10 codes, you have CPT codes, you have all of this information, and the computers, the software, you know, you make one little change in an area over on the left-hand side, and the domino effect can just be catastrophic in getting claims out and getting claims paid. So the technology is challenged in the programming itself.
Yeah.
Another challenge is that despite us being on electronic medical record, despite the fact that we do desktop faxing and we really try to have as little paper as possible, last year we received over 100,000 pieces of paper into our system, which went, you know, which had to be looked at, whether it was paper or electronic.
Wow.
But that piece of paper needed to be looked at, and you know, one of two things needed to happen. It either needed to go into the patient's chart as a reference, or you know, the doctor needed to look at it, sign off, and then that document imported into the patient's chart. I think a lot of attempts have been made through what they call HL7, and now FHIR is the big buzzword in electronic medical records. But you know, some practices, especially if they're rural practices, have not always been able to adapt because it's so expensive to implement and train people on these systems. I don't think people understand the complexities of the electronic medical record and where the data points all come in. So if you're looking at a claim form, there are, I think, 36 boxes on a HCFA form, and it has everything from patient demographics to CPT codes and ICD-9 codes. And then you kind of parse that out a little bit more and checking the box so that you're giving reporting information to these insurance companies. And so I think we're so inundated with checking the box because somebody wants these KPIs of data for population health. And, you know, a lot of that data, I'm not saying it's
it makes it bulkier.
It does make it bulkier. It's not that it's irrelevant, but it's not always telling the doctor the whole picture of what's going on with that patient.
Sure.
And just trying to manage the paperwork to make sure that, okay, we sent this patient to the rheumatologist. They saw the rheumatologist. You know, here's what the rheumatologist said, because sometimes the rheumatologist will send them back to us and say, okay, you're fine. Your PCP can manage it. Other times, you know, we just have to let the rheumatologist manage that patient. So there is some give and take on that aspect as well.
Yeah.
And really knowing, you know, what is best for the patient with the information that we can get in, and then also the information that we send out so that that specialist also knows what's going on with the patient, because we don't want the specialist to have to reinvent the wheel.
Sure. Yeah. So, and I know firsthand the complexity of these systems and how perfectly you need to map all fields for them to speak to each other. We've done a few projects of integrating, you know, call center technologies with EHRs through open APIs, and it is a huge lift and constantly needs to be managed. So I've you know, felt the pain to a degree with how hard it is, as much as you want to be able to connect, just that not always being the option. So I guess my question for you would be, what do you think will happen first? We will just focus on maybe five of the top EHR systems that will consolidate all the other ones, and then everyone will be, you know, with one of maybe five that can start speaking to each other? Or do you think someone will come out with what we call like a middleware that will be that bridge between everything out there to start connecting data?
It could be a combination of the two. I mean, you know, if you look at how many EMR companies were out there, especially at the height of meaningful use, and all the electronic medical record systems that basically got either bought out or went out of business because they just couldn't meet the criteria for meaningful use. And so, I mean, we're kind of there now. I mean, you've got top maybe 5 to 7 systems that are out there. No one system is perfect. I think middleware is really going to be the answer, especially if you're trying to draw rural practices into the mix. I mean, we have such a need for technology and more healthcare avenues, especially into rural Georgia. The only way that a lot of these patients are going to be able to get, you know, proper care, proper management of their care is through technology and having the ability of that small one doc family guy who may be in the middle of Oklahoma, where there's not another doctor or hospital around for, you know, 2 hours.
Sure.
And he's got a patient that needs some help, and he's been on, you know, God, Mises Tiger. I'm just throwing something out there that used to be one of the EMR systems. It's actually now Allscripts, so I don't want, they're not out of business or gone. They've got just it. Moved. But, you know, he didn't, this, you know, maybe this doctor, he didn't fit the criteria to have to qualify for meaningful use. And so, you know, and maybe he can't afford to buy, you know, spend $50,000, $60,000 on a new EMR system. So there has to be a way to tie those practices into the bigger picture. So I don't think we're done seeing some consolidation of EMR systems. I think we will, you know, continue to see that parsed down a little bit. Most entities, especially in urban areas, but we've got to have some strong middleware, you know, to take care of those smaller clinics that may not have the technology in their back pocket to be able to do what we can do in the little city.
Yeah, you can't leave the little guys behind, and just, you know, not everyone can afford Epic. We know that, right? Or even the Athenas and ECWs out there. They're all expensive tools. So I agree. There has to be a way to find that middle communication bridge. And I think then, you know, once specialties really start dialing in a continuum of care, with also the payers trying to push more preventative care versus reactive care, reimbursing correctly for all those preventative measures, we might be able to turn this thing around and feel good about where our healthcare industry is going.
Well, and that's what we're trying to do at Piedmont Internal Medicine, is really bring what we're doing to the forefront, whether it's grassroots advocacy on the political side or the policy side. It's really trying to bring front and center. You know, we have some reimbursement policies that don't make a whole lot of sense, especially with our older population. And, you know, I'll use remote care and chronic care is a good example. The believe it or not, the pushback that I get from patients that don't want to go onto these programs is they don't want to get a bill. Medicare doesn't cover these services at 100%. So they get hit with their deductible at the beginning of the year, and then they have their 20% coinsurance, or if they're on a Medicare Advantage plan, there is a copay.
Sure.
And, you know, either the patient doesn't have the ability to pay because they're on a fixed income, or they don't want to have that bill. So then they decide, well, I'm not going to be in the program. And what we see is that often these are the patients that need to be in the program.
Sure.
You know, we want to keep them out of the hospital. We want to, you know, try to mitigate as much as we can any disease progression. So I think that, you know, in order for us to get there, we're going to have to really take a hard look at, you know, what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, if the doctors keep getting squeezed, you know, I can't keep the door open. At some point, you know, when my expenses are greater than the revenue coming in,
yeah,
because reimbursement keeps getting cut, I don't have a whole lot of choice.
Yeah. And everyone's feeling that squeeze. I feel like not just the larger groups, mid-sized groups, small groups, everyone's getting cut at the knees. Cost of goods through the roof, cost of labor through the roof, reimbursement stagnant or shrinking. How do you survive?
Well, I think, you know, you just try to do your best. You know, I was telling someone a couple of weeks ago, I was like, yeah, you know, if Walmart you know, if they have a price increase or they have to pay their staff more, they can just increase their prices. We sure. can't do that in healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because most of our money comes from insurance companies yeah. or the government. So it's a third party paying our bills. I mean, not only do they pay the bills, but they get to decide how much we get paid or even if we get paid.
Drag their feet for you to get paid.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, that's another challenge. And I think until people truly understand what happens in healthcare and how we get paid and are willing to step up and make some hard changes. And it doesn't have to, and those hard changes don't have to compromise the quality of healthcare.
Sure.
But I think some of the changes that we've, the path that we've been going down is a little unrealistic. And instead of making our jobs easier, it's making it more complex. Yeah. The more complex things are, then the less time we have to care for our patients.
Sure.
And so that ends up doing, you know, being opposite of what we've set out to do, which is, you know, help people stay healthy.
Sure.
Help
yeah.
them get better.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that we are where we are today with doctors struggling to make ends meet. Everyone thinks there are, you know, not overpaid, but paid very well. And that there's just, you know, fluid cash coming into the practice. And 90% of people are upside down over the past few years with the changes that have happened. And it seems like the starting point is grassroots physicians banding together, really rattling the cage until payers and big pharma realize that they're choking the industry out and it's going to blow up in their face. They're going to have no more providers that are generating all their revenue. People just aren't going to want to become doctors if they learn how challenging the industry is in the next few generations.
And you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, and I think that's one of the saddest parts about this is that, you know, the doctors are the ones that drive the industry.
Yeah.
And if you don't have any doctors, you don't have an industry.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not really quite sure what we need to do about that. But again, I think some hard conversations, honest conversations
sure.
need to happen. And they don't have to be harsh, but they need to be had.
We need to look at ourselves in the mirror.
Exactly.
Take a long look. Well, Kelly, I know that you and your team are movers and shakers and you're, you know, trailblazers to try to make some of these changes. So thank you for everything that you guys are doing. And, you know, that's partially part of the goal of this podcast is to meet organizations like yours. And I think down the road, we're going to try to bring a lot of these other like-minded individuals that we've met through the podcast together, maybe through a live meeting, conference, or a virtual meeting, but try to really start putting the pieces together for people that have the drive and energy to fight this battle.
I think that would be awesome.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I would love to check in with you a few months down the road later in the year and see how things are going at Piedmont in internal medicine.
That would be great, Elliot. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Terrific. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful one.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.